Top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
I know what you're thinking. Mine's bigger than yours, right? Isn't that fair? Throw it away. All right?
Tons of popcorn there.
Yeah.
And all you gotta do is go climb a tree to go eat it.
It was a night like any other night. Then something happened.
Oh, good Lord. It's unbelievable. It's horrible.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, my name's Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic wasteland, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1960s to today. Check us out at reallyawfulmovies.com, part of the Crypt TV family. From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 193, Video Nasties.
Yeah, this is sort of like a follow-up from our discussion last week when we were talking about the horrific film Don't Go Near the Park, and I say horrific in quotes, because it really wasn't.
In the deplorable sense, not that it was horrifying, yeah.
But, despite the fact that Don't Go Near the Park was sort of a lame film with very little in the way of actual gore or disturbing content, it was put on that infamous list in the 80s in the UK, the quote-unquote Video Nasties. Now, Video Nasties, we've talked about them quite a bit on this podcast, but there was a moral panic with the advent of the VCR and the fact that no longer have to go to a theater to see a movie and ostensibly
get vetted by someone to sell you the ticket.
There was a gatekeeper who sold you the ticket. And if you were too young to see a movie like, let's say, The Evil Dead, he would say, I'm sorry, you can't buy a ticket. Whereas with the VCR in every household being so ubiquitous, kids could, and this was the argument, go into stores, rent these subversive, transgressive films that would destroy the moral fabric of the youth. So in order to protect the minds of the impressionable youth, and this is what the moral majority always does, they raise a ruckus. And the ruckus then invariably leads to some form of labeling, editing, and in some cases outright censorship. And with the Video Nasties, it was quite interesting in the sense that a whole bunch of films got lumped into the Video Nasties. Not all of them were banned outright. Some of them were edited. Sometimes unbeknownst to the actual filmmakers, the distributor would make their own edit to make it acceptable for rental distribution in the UK. Some films were banned outright. Some stores were prosecuted if they were caught renting these films to minors. So what ended up happening is you have a list of films called colloquially, the Notorious 72. And these are the films that made the Video Nasty list. Now, it's sort of like a mark of a horror fan, a badge of honor, to have seen as many of the Notorious 72 as possible. What we're going to do in today's podcast is we're going to go through not every film on the list, but some of them, you know, a good chunk of them, and just say a word or two. Have we seen them? Do they deserve to be on the Video Nasty list?
Oh, I was just going to say, the genesis for this discussion was that we noticed even ourselves that we'd covered so many of these films already that we thought this, it naturally would segue into a more broad discussion of the entire phenomenon. And, you mentioned Don't Go Near the Park, which probably by virtue of having Don't in the title, it just got lumped in with the others because there's nothing really there. But there's it runs the gamut from really, truly infamous, like I Spit on Your Grave, to really more fluffier offerings, if you want to call it that, like the aforementioned Don't Go Near the Park.
So, or Evil Dead.
Oh, Evil Dead as well, and but I guess
I guess some would object to the infamous tree rape scene.
Yeah.
But when you compare the Evil Dead to some other films of the Video Nasty list, it really is quite innocuous. For example, one of the first ones I'm going to bring up is Anthropophagus, the Beast. Now, this was a film that I had talked about on the podcast way back when we were doing a Crap of the Week segment, and I decided to watch Anthropophagus, directed by the notorious Joe D'Amato. Now, Joe D'Amato is a filmmaker who is nothing if not transgressive and shocking and in your family. He directed a whole bunch of the Emmanuel films. He directed Beyond the Darkness, a.k.a. Buen Omega. He directed Hardcore Porn. And Anthropophagus, it's funny because when we were talking about the film, I kept taking out one of the syllables. I kept referring to it as Anthropophagus. And I'm going to remedy that and call it by its title, Anthropophagus. But this film dealt with cannibalism. And there's a lot of films deal with cannibalism on the Video Nasty list. In fact, Don't Go Near the Park deals with a little bit of cannibalism. And one of our listeners, DM Elms, pointed out that in her opinion, oftentimes with Video Nasties, it wasn't so much what they show, but what was happening. So the minute you had cannibalism, it's like, oh, Video Nasty. Anthropophagus, cannibalism, it's not a gore fest from start to finish, but there are definitely scenes that I would say would be objectionable. I mean, the most infamous scene, of course, would probably be the fetus eating scene, where Joe D'Amato had the main character, the titular Anthropophagus, played by George Eastman, eat a rabbit. But It was all trussed up in blood and stuff, what have you. And so, yeah, I mean, I could see that being a Video Nasty. Again, is it something that would destroy the fabric of society as we know it? I don't think so. But that's fair. I think it's a fair Video Nasty.
But so something like Cannibal Apocalypse, which really is about the aftermath of, I guess it's more of a zombie film than a cannibal film with John Saxon, right?
And that's on the Video Nasty list.
Too. Yeah, but there's nothing really that would, other than, you know, brief subject matter where I think that spurs the virus that turns people into zombies, but it's not a cannibal film per se.
Well, the thing about
like title, like, you know, a hyperbolic title notwithstanding.
And again, it's, you know, what is happening in the film. Now, a lot of these cannibal films, Cannibal Ferox, Cannibal Holocaust, now for Cannibal Apocalypse, they only cut out 2 seconds of animal cruelty, but in Cannibal Holocaust, they had to cut out 5 minutes and 44 seconds. And most people will say that that is what is the most off-putting part of Cannibal Holocaust, is those 5 minutes and 44 seconds.
Yeah, Cannibal Ferox, too, with the torture of the tortoises. Forgive the alliteration there, but yeah. So if a censorship board, and we have one in the province of Ontario,
well,
we're podcasting
with the tortoise torture.
I think that was common for, I think it was whatever animal they could get their hands on, literally, in the jungle, and then massacre right there. So it was a frequent occurrence in all these films, but if you're going to censor anything, because you can't be, well, or maybe you can be, a free speech, if you want to call it that, absolutist in a film? In the film genre, because there has to be some standard. So if you're going to draw the line, it might as well be animal cruelty at some point, right? So 5 minutes I did not know about, and that's disturbing because those are the scenes, and this is ironic too, it's not humans getting tortured or having their penises lopped off or whatever it is. It's the animal stuff that gets me the most. Well, that's just, adds the snuff element of it.
It's interesting to bring up snuff because with the cannibal movies, they were not utilizing any sort of special effect. When you see John Morgan's penis get lopped off in Cannibal Ferox.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, it's not actually happening, but when they're tearing that giant torso apart in Cannibal Holocaust, that is real. And these are real animals getting killed.
But again, there's hunting shows where people were. There's hunting shows in the U.S., not so much here, but they have them where you have guys, and the whole thing is just a guy maybe in camouflage gear sitting in a tree waiting for a buck to go by, and then he shoots it.
Okay,
it just doesn't have
one thing to shoot an animal for the sport of hunt, and that's the end of that. But when you have these movies where they're disemboweling, like, you know, it's a leering gaze of the camera. It's not just a quick shot, dead, done. Like this was
exploitive. And a la the Colosseum in ancient Rome, they would actually take different animals. And I know this is what happened. I think, we keep doing this, confusing Ferox and Holocaust. But it might have been both, where they just took animals, threw them together, and then watched one consume another under the gaze of... of the leering gaze of the camera, like a David Attenborough like nature film. But not even, because that's at least real nature. This, they would take animals and just feed them to one another for the benefit of, benefit is in the loosest sense, for exploitation.
Yeah, it's funny because when we talked about Camel Ferox, Umberto Lenzi claimed that they just happened upon.
Yeah, of course.
I believe it was like a snake and a mongoose. Or And they said the cameras are ready and they just shot it. But in actuality, on the special features of the Blu-ray, you can actually see the catapult they use to shoot the mongoose right in the snake's mouth. So they call bullshit on that. Anyway, moving on from cannibalism, another film that strikes me on this list is Bay of Blood, a.k.a. Twitcher the Death Nerd. Now, this was a latter-day Mario Bava film.
Which I've not seen, which is, I'm embarrassed to say, as a Bava fan, but you have.
Yeah, and, I mean, one thing about Bay of Blood, it was tremendously influential on Friday the 13th, Part 2. A lot of the kills were almost taken wholesale from it, including the shish kebab through the bed. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's just like your standard sort of, like, you know, Tenil Indians type of setup. Maybe it's a proto-slasher, but again, it was not, I don't think it was that objectionable. So I'm surprised that that's on there. Blood Feast, now that's interesting, because when Blood Feast came out in, what was it, 63?
Yes.
I mean, that was the first gore film. I mean, if it ever should have been banned, it should have been banned then. Because it was so shocking and so transgressive and so never seen before. But in 1984, Blood Feast, I mean, you know, it's campy. It's, the blood could not look more fake. It is, I will say, I'm going to admit, I mean, I remember when I was young, I was walking through the horror section of my local mom and pop video shop, and they did have Blood Feast. And I picked up the back of the box, turned to the back, looked at some of the pictures, and they did disturb me.
Mm-hmm.
But in the context of the film, and you're thinking 1980s audiences, I mean, you got to get past this. I mean, this stuff was really... I mean, Horace Gordon Lewis, the godfather of gore, God rest his soul, his films were gory, but they were campy. There was a certain joie de vivre to his gore. I don't know how to describe it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I really don't think that it should have been on that infamous list. It was a prosecuted film.
Yeah, it was the kind of like oxygenated blood and bright red thing you would see in a swath at a hardware store or something, or like the paint supply place. Like it was obviously, you know, that standard had been topped numerous times on the way into the 80s, and again, yeah, unfairly lumped in.
So we have Don't Go in the Woods. I'm not going to talk anymore about the movie. We did a podcast on it. It's a terrible movie.
Mm-hmm.
Again.
Nothing in the way of, again, unfairly lumped in with the Don't films.
Yeah, now, again, I'm going to say we're not going through, I'm skipping through some films, but the next film I've seen on the list is a film I've yet to see, Abel Ferrara's Driller Killer. You've seen it.
Yeah, it's, you know, not much to say about it other than, cashing in on a name, easy to promote, because, you know, it rhymes, it's a novelty, it's a gimmick, but really it was just a guerrilla-style filmmaking exercise through the, if I'm not mistaken, the East Village of New York, where it just pointing a camera at stuff. Most of it was murky, maybe it was the print I saw. Nothing terribly wrong with it, other than, I mean, the title, it speaks to the kind of controversy that the Texas Chainsaw Massacre would have courted for the same unfair reasons, really.
It just, so you're saying any time you put a power tool in the title of a movie,
yes, it's yes,
the video nasty list. Toolbox Murders never made it the video nasty list.
No, actually, I guess that was more of a procedural. It didn't have anything in the way of excessive gore either. And yeah, another one we podcasted,
The Burning.
Aha, maybe for the boat kill, the absolute mayhem and carnage, and one of the all time great
Tom Savini set pieces, yeah.
Yes, and move horror film kills in history.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, yeah, I'll give that one a maybe.
See, I'm against censorship in all its forms. So I can't, when you say, I mean, I don't want to advocate and say, well, it should be on the list, because, I mean, for example, Face of Death is on the list. I don't go near those Mondo films. I don't like those Mondo films.
No.
Where they show actual footage of atrocities happening throughout the world.
Yeah, I avoid all that ISIS stuff as well. I don't want to see, like, let's say, Daniel Pearl being killed, all that stuff. Like, avoid it, like, you know, like the plague.
It's out there if you want to see it, but the reality is, I abhor censorship in all its forms. I've said this before. I mean, I remember one time I bought an infamous film that was, again, on the Video Nasty list, Lucio Fulci's The New York Ripper. It was a UK copy, because I don't think it's got... maybe at this point it has had a legitimate US release. And it said, this is the most complete uncut copy. What I didn't notice, except for in the very, very small print, is in existence in the UK.
Oh, I see. Meant
there was still one or two frames that were missing of the infamous nipple slice.
Oh, I was going to say, speaking of cuts, yeah, that was tough to watch. And
But I returned it. I returned it because I don't care if you're cutting 6 minutes or 6 seconds. I want to see the pure, unadulterated...
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
An
expurgated filmmaker's vision. And to prepare for this podcast, which is really, you know, off the cuff to the best of our abilities, but I did get a little bit into how some of the films, even before this period in the 80s where this really happened, I guess one of them was Oliver Reed and The Devils, and they had...
Well, that film has yet to fully be released.
An expurgated version. Yeah, who's the filmmaker? I forget, but it should.
Ken Russell.
Yeah, Ken Russell, yeah. And he was having
a brilliant movie.
Yeah, and he was having like a terrific, well, I don't want to say terrific, but entertaining to learn about back and forth between him and his artistic vision and his lack of wanting to compromise it and some faceless, ridiculous bureaucrat sitting in a cubicle behind a desk who was objecting to every little facet of something. So you could say, okay, you have a nun, orgy, all this stuff, but everything was being objected to, and he finally had to draw a line in the sand and say, okay, no more. Mm-hmm. But even then, he wasn't, you know, he was just sort of relenting at some point, and he didn't even think that thing would see the light of day. And it was just constantly on his case.
That's the thing I object to, and, you know, the UK, it was not the only country that was guilty of. Here in Ontario, we had a notorious censorship board. David Cronenberg railed against it, where they would just, once again, just say snip, 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 cut, 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 cut. He said that they were the most draconian board of them all, where you have these faceless bureaucrats that are acting as the arbitrator of, like, you know, the moral majority, saying, you know, we as the populace can and can't see.
With no background in arts or film or anything, typically. Yeah, just, again, a government functionary.
Now, they're not going after, you know, Caravaggio paintings.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not going after Hieronymus Bosch, right? Mm-hmm. These are pretty gruesome, are they?
Yeah, yeah. The Anatomist lesson with, is this Van Gogh? But, yeah, it's just an arbitrary... do they even have criteria by which they judge? I don't even know. Because why would...
Because one is highbrow.
Well, I suppose.
One is lowbrow.
Yeah, when you think of the French New Wave and the depictions of rape and all that stuff, I mean, it makes you wonder whether anything is permissible now and whether... Again, these demarcation points are just arbitrary because of our affinity for pets and animals and as stewards of nature. That's why they don't like turtles being massacred, but protracted rape scenes a la Last House on the Left or the ripoff thereof of the house House at the Edge of the Park. That's my bad. Yeah, too, with John Morgan, aka Giovanni,
a lot of Video Nasties.
Yeah, Giovanni Lombardo Radice. Yeah, and that was, and the same guy in both films.
Yeah.
But again, yeah, protracted, lengthy, extended,
straw dogs,
difficult to process, awful rape scenes, and it is like, okay, should that be cut? Because then it really undermines the vision, especially in a revenge film where you really have to be invested in the person doing the revenge. Who cares?
Another one I see here is I Spit on Your Grave. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, that's the dramatic impetus of the movie is the rape revenge. Well, how can the revenge have any sort of cathartic element to it if you don't have the rape? I don't enjoy watching rape. I don't enjoy it at all. I love Straw Dogs. But that's a film that I really can only watch, you know, once every 5 to 6, 7, 8 years. Because that rape scene, Susan George, I believe it was, who was getting raped, right? And it was, and oh, it just goes on and on and on. But you needed that to really punctuate the horror, so that when Dustin Hoffman actually gets his revenge and becomes, you know, rises up and becomes the Avenger, without that rape scene, it just would have been hollow. And I mean, if you look at the remake of that movie where they truncated that sort of stuff and then shoot it with the sort of like static camera or whatever, it was just hollow. It was awful. So, getting back to the list, a lot of Fulci, The Beyond, House by the Cemetery. I mean, Fulci is Fulci.
Yeah, yeah.
So, what more to say? another one, Night of the Bloody Apes. This is one of our mutual favorites, I think.
Yes.
It's a Mexican film.
Yeah, where, if I'm not mistaken, there's a diabolical genius doctor who tries to cure leukemia with a heart transplant, which I always thought was hilarious because it's a bone marrow disease. But again, like, this is just gonzo filmmaking with just an excuse to have to showcase luchador wrestling with a bunch of apes running around. It wasn't particularly bloody either, but again,
well, no, but there was got to be
the weirdest movie to appear on this list.
Well, no, but there was actual surgery footage, and
I believe, really?
Yeah, and I believe it was a pig. I believe is what they were using, but it was quite,
so a la high school biology class in a way, huh?
But, so, I'm sure that's what they objected to, was the...
But again, a mid-60s film a la Blood Feast, it's just sort of an outlier there, but...
Okay, so let's go further down the list, skipping a few. Let's see, what else do we have here? We got, Tenebrae. Dario Argento's giallo classic Tenebrae. I can only think that they objected to the arm-lopping scene. What else could have been so objectionable in that film? You look confused.
No, because nothing else. What else could there be?
I mean, you got this pervasive sense of dread throughout. I mean,
yeah. But it doesn't address the themes that you mentioned earlier. That would be the extended rape or the transgressive boundary pushing of cannibalism or real life, you know, surgical procedures, all that kind of stuff. It's sort of. And again, it falls into the Don't Go Near the Park category if it's just lumped in with them because of the name associated with it.
Now, here's one that I haven't seen, but you have. I know about this because you wrote it up for a book. Uli Lomel's, the infamous Uli Lomel's 1980 classic, and again, classic in quotes, The Boogeyman. Chris, tell me about The Boogeyman.
Well, yeah, again, a supernatural film where there's... Deus Ex Machina was some spirit from the great beyond entering through a child through a mirror. I don't know. I didn't recall anything that was so abhorrent. Again, stuff that's just super gory but doesn't boundary cross in the other criteria we mentioned. Arbitrary, again.
And again, it would destroy the moral fabric of, you know, the youth of the mid-80s.
Yeah.
Same with Contamination, that goofy alien rip-off directed by Lou Kutzy.
Yeah.
We podcasted that. It's just silliness.
Yeah.
Dead and Buried, that's not silliness. It's a great film.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you got an eyeball through... Sorry, you got a hypodermic through the eyeball?
Classic kill featured prominently in our book, Death by Umbrella. 100 Weirdest Horror Movie Weapons. Yeah, they're fantastic.
Yeah, all the Don't films. Don't Go in the House. Don't Go Near the Park. All these, they're all on the list.
But again, like, is that so egregious just because it's an eyeball gouging a la Fulci that would make it there solely on that basis? I guess so.
Well,
I mean,
it's funny because, I mean, The Beyond is on the list. Zombie Flesh Eaters, whatever, Zombie 2. You don't see Luciana and DeLue on the list.
Ah, yes. Yeah.
What?
Exactly.
I think it's because this genre is the most maligned of all genres, and it's just this instant knee-jerk reaction that if it's art, anything is permissible, highbrow versus lowbrow. Luciana DeLue, to artistically revered surrealist Louis Buñuel, Salvador Dali. We did a podcast on Luciana DeLue, but. Yeah, they didn't object to that at all, but,
So I guess we're on the same page as to objecting to censorship of all kinds, and listeners will note here that we don't have any pre-show caveats that a lot of podcasts do, whereas especially the case with true crime podcasts, we'll just say we're going to talk about something that listeners may find uncomfortable. We're going to use actual footage of the audio footage of the, let's say, Luca Magnotta kill or something. I've heard some of these podcasts, but really, like, we don't mention that at all. We leave it up to the adults that presumably our audience comprises. You know, I'm reminded of that wonderful quote by C.S. Lewis, the Narnia series author and Christian apologist, who said, better to be ruled by robber barons than omnipotent moral busybodies. So, and that's who this category of people falls under. Mm-hmm. Just some government schmo. And it's weird, too. These are the same people who decide often whether something merits getting funding from the government, too. And obviously Cronenberg, it's funny that he should take umbrage with the censorship board, too, because he was getting funded by people.
Well,
His films would be, like, decried by...
I think it was Rabid, where there was this infamous article in one of our papers, maybe the Toronto Star, Toronto Sun, your tax dollars are funding
this film. Funding this film, yeah. And questioning sort of any artistic merit behind it. So, yeah, should there be any censorship? Well, we'll see. Yeah, again... animal cruelty, but
because it's up to the viewer, and if you're talking about,
well, I guess
kids,
that would violate a law if you're going to, like, clearly Umberto Lenzi, he would have, right, that's some serious boundary crossing right there. So if you're committing a crime and showing it, then you're committing a crime too, right?
Well, why is Umberto Lenzi committing a crime but not David Attenborough?
Well, he's just filming nature taking its course. As opposed to taking
Lenzi
nature...
Lenzi could say he was... I can argue that he was doing the exact same thing. He just gave it a little bit of a push or a shove, you know?
And, yeah, and the... I guess the...
Dave Attenborough was a naturalist, right? Or am I...
Yeah, yes, yes. Yeah, okay. But I guess it speaks as to whether, you know, the...
Or why not, the python
evolved to coexist with the
late, great Steve Irwin. I mean, you know,
okay,
he,
yeah.
He got prosecuted. I mean, some of the stuff he did was quite cruel. He would be poking and prodding these snakes with the...
Oh, yeah, true enough. But, I mean, the python didn't, like, co-evolve with the catapult to help it feed, right?
When you start, you know, making these...
there has to be some distinctions, some qualifiers.
But that's the thing. That's a slippery slope, is when you start making these qualifiers, that's the problem, you know?
Yeah, I guess, well, would you be comfortable because, like,
Diodato did in Cannibal Holocaust, what he depicted was reprehensible, but at the same time, you know, you're making qualifications, and it's not up to us to qualify. We're not the arbiters of the moral majority, so you were talking about...
Well,
Catherine,
I suppose so. Catherine Breillat, is that how you say it?
Yeah, the French director.
Yeah, right? The French director, so, I mean...
Provocateur, yeah.
So, I saw one of her films at TIFF, I believe, and the audience was squirming, but, I mean, what... Well, when you see stuff like real sex, like Nine Songs, Michael Winterbottom film there with just real sex, quote-unquote, mm-hmm. like... That's all fine and good if it's done in an artistic way, but would you, like, let's say someone's jizzing on someone.
Again,
does that pass the censorship board?
How do you define artistic way?
Well, no, it's like there's some sort of cutoff whereby you don't let 17-year-olds in, or you give
that's
an
why
X.
We have a rating system.
Oh, okay, so that's yeah, I guess so. So that just qualifies as anything.
I mean,
it just crosses the line into porn.
I haven't seen it, but Last Tango in Paris, Bernard Bertolucci.
Yeah, Marlon Brando's big bloated body in there.
Yeah, and the infamous use of butter. Don't Look Now, you know, where it was purported that Julie Christie and Donald Sutherland were actually having real intercourse on camera. Hmm. Now, okay, you didn't see...
Well, I mean, so is there a boundary between porno and
well, that's,
and
that's
film?
The what is the boundary?
Yeah, because if it's just sex, I don't want to say just sex.
We're getting
into
a different discussion here, but yeah. The Toolbox Murders was on the Video Nasty list.
Huh.
I just saw that. I put the list aside.
Oh,
right,
okay. Oh, I see. All right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what is just sex? Like, again.
Well, no.
Before you have Gonzo, where...
Yeah, triple, quadruple penetration.
Well, it's not that, but there's no plot. There's no. It's just sex. Are you saying that there needs to be some story around? There needs to be a plot.
Well, it just depends on whether any distinction can be even made. If you're going to show someone jizzing in someone's face, pardon my French here, is that porn? Is that film? Is there any way
film,
for that to be cut?
If it's shot on film or video, it's film. You know, but we're just classifying it as porn.
I guess so. But I guess it depends whether, again, whether it's real or not. So then you even fall into, you know, there's something about Mary where you have the infamous jizz scene and you know. But
there you go. I mean, there was that scene where,
one of the great scenes of all time. I was just saying, if you thought the means of delivery was the issue, specifically relating to the VCR and having access, I mean, how much more easy is it to see on YouTube? And even then, they might have had a point, because we were able to circumnavigate the gatekeeper video store Ma and Pa operator, because we knew which places to go to get our fix, and they invariably involved maybe Koreans or Chinese, fresh off the boat, didn't speak the language too well, weren't too invested in, dotting all the I's and crossing the T's.
That'd be a trigger warning right there.
Oh, yeah, exactly. But we knew which places to go, and then you also knew that the chains were very...
The face kid, you know, was about 14, 15.
Yeah, exactly. Or obviously the chains like Blockbuster, where they wouldn't rent you anything, and where...
Blockbuster actually cut some of their...
They were notorious. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, forget Conor McGregor. Yeah, or Christopher Wallace. Yeah, they were notorious for doing that, and we eschewed them and went to the.
Well, Jumbo Video was incredible. They had it all, but for listeners that aren't local, they don't know Jumbo Video. But I just want to get back to what we were talking earlier about pornography, because yet again, why is sex and sexuality such a taboo? Why is that something that needs to be shielded away from the virginal eyes of the youth? I mean, this is a natural part. If not for sex and sexuality, you and I wouldn't be here having this discussion. So what is it about that is so transgressive?
I guess nothing insofar as everyone, if you want to call it natural, or whether it's nature or nurture, how did shame come about? But we don't walk around naked. And so there has to be some sort of line where something, you don't want to see something depicted, or if it is depicted, you have to seek it out in a way that doesn't constitute a piece of art, as no one would call Beyond the Green Door a piece of art, or the Bang Brothers notorious online series.
You're talking in absolutes, and when you say one, I mean, let's talk, I'm sure if
As everyone who has indulged in porn.
If I contacted our good friend Robin Bougie, he would say it was a huge, a tremendous piece of art, so, Beyond the Green Door.
Well, I'd love to hear his definition as it pertains to, those bait and switch porno series online where they lure someone into a van and then threaten to kidnap them if they don't do something. Or
is that really real?
No, it's not. Well, it's not real, but I mean Bang Brothers and
snuff,
that.
The film Snuff.
Oh yeah, also for sure.
The Neo Nazis list.
But people, even depending on whether you're a first wave Camille Paglia type feminist, or a third wave, or Andrea Dworkin second wave type feminist, some people take serious umbrage with how these dual, triple, quadruple penetration films depict, let's say, female empowerment and involvement in the sexual act. So, even they would be splitting hairs within the genre. It's a tough one.
I think ultimately a lot of it comes down to agency. Mm-hmm. And if
letting people do what they want as adults.
Yeah, no, but that, there's that, but also the people are participating in these sexual acts, right? I mean, if it's their choice to do so, if they're not doing it under duress or force, then we really have no...
True, and I guess it's a... and also it's a false comparison. I guess I'm arguing against myself, because this isn't exactly... There's a wild, wild west of the internet where you can look at anything at any time, and there's no... it's not legitimate, and it's never been legitimate, except... those female-centric porn where they have the story and they have lovemaking shown and soft lighting and the stuff that appeals more to women and not the close-ups of the stuff happening. So it appeals to very different sensibilities.
So I'm thinking about agency. I mean, obviously those poor animals in those Campbell films had no agency whatsoever.
Yeah, for sure.
Just pulled out the
river. And crimes are being committed on screen. Yeah.
But, I mean, I recall, and again, it comes down to, what we ascribe to it, whether it has any sort of merit, be it educational, be it artistic, what have you. And I recall in grade school watching a baby being born. That was probably one of the most disturbing things I've ever seen in my entire life. And everything was no pun intended, wide open, and it was there. But that had
quote-unquote educational merit, whereas within, you know, these genres...
Dissected pig, which is something you may or may not have encountered in high school biology.
I did it, yeah.
You did it, yeah, versus like that same creature being... that's true. Well, yeah, nor do they when you have a delicious porchetta sandwich. But yeah, it's the same thing. Like, yeah, also depicting something that is just uncomfortable that we, nothing goes viral quicker than, captive factory farm animals that are held in these deplorable conditions. So it's like, yeah, that's something, it's a gateway from the farm to the table, but we wouldn't all eat if a million chickens an hour weren't being, massacred. And it's something, yeah, that we're uncomfortable seeing depicted. We don't like to see animals being killed, even if it's by necessity that we have to.
Okay, so ultimately...
But did they eat the turtle in the cannibal films? I think they might have. Yeah. So does that make it right too? Is there just
that was their means of sustenance? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So the question I want to ask you then is: as society, do we have the right to arbitrate what is proper and moral, and what is improper and immoral?
Hmm. Well, I guess, yeah, I mean, like a country like Germany will be wrestling with that, right? Where they have depictions of swastikas and membership in Nazi party and
that's illegal in Germany.
Yes, that's what. So they have to wrestle with whether you could just walk around the street with a copy of Mein Kampf and who's to tell whether you're reading it for educational purposes and for personal edification versus some prurient, alt-right, ethnic nativist kind of gross interest. But it's not for us to decide, again, because that stuff goes underground.
See, the problem with this discussion is that you're eventually going to run into some sort of hypocrisy or some sort of inconsistency with your argument, because here I am saying I don't believe in censorship at all, and yet when it comes to, and I don't even want to say the alt-right because, that's a ridiculous media manufacturer term. Hmm. These are Nazis, pure and simple.
Yeah, yeah.
But when it comes to that sort of stuff, when it comes to glorification of that, Hitler and that regime and fascism and so on, I fully support any ban whatsoever, so I guess I am being very...
Well, I guess, yeah, senior producers have to wrestle with this stuff on CNN all the time where they have, where they get sent... kidnap videos by ISIS or Boko Haram or one of these things, and then that stuff gets out, and they make those calls all the time, and it ceases to have, I don't think it has any news value once the killing of a person has no news value, really. But again, when the monk, was it the monk or self-immolation? Mm-hmm. And that becomes like a...
Are you talking about the Vietnam War protester?
Yes, yeah, the protester, and that becomes like the cover of a magazine, and it becomes such a part of the common vernacular that that couldn't help but transcend any sort of journalistic propriety at the time. It gets out there, and seeing, let's say, Rodney King being beaten again, like, does that definitely has a news value, or the trucker in the subsequent...
Both of those have
extreme
again,
value.
And again, him getting pulled from that truck.
Yeah,
again,
and that's something that you won't forget. So
even
again,
now, I mean, you're looking at what's happening...
Oh, the Charlottesville thing.
But also what's happening in Texas, in Houston.
Oh, yeah.
Harvey, I mean, that's disaster porn to a certain extent. You know, you're watching people basically...
Yeah, any sobriquet with porn attached to it. Because I was thinking that, like, because I'm an avid Instagram user and I'm an avid photographer, there's something called ruin porn, where...
a colleague of mine was talking about that.
That's pretty wild.
There's a
Vice documentary where they went to this. It was once the largest factory in the world. Mm. And this is, I want to say it's Chrysler, correct me if I'm wrong, and this is the size of several football fields. It is now a tourist destination to the point where they have to staff many security guards because people were getting robbed going there to take photographs. So this was a decaying factory in post-industrial Detroit.
People
are going, and this is a prurient just way of people going into someone's neighborhood and depicting degraded.
That's horribly
exploitative. Yeah. Mm. So, I mean, yeah, where do you draw the line there? And it's like, how can... anything be shown. It's just, I would side on the free-for-all, the classical liberal side, the John Locke, and just say everything goes and anything goes. And yeah, I would love to see the abolition of our particularly like intrusive and invasive Ontario censorship board.
Well, it's ridiculous. It's been relaxed quite a bit since the 80s and whatnot. When porno magazines would be sold in the stores and you would purchase one, I was too young to purchase them at the time, but apparently there were panels that were missing. They were cut out because they were deemed inappropriate by the censorship board, and they would reprint it with these, you have these white panels. Anyhow, as I was saying before, it's funny because this discussion started out about, just talking about horror movies, video nasties, what have you, and it sort of morphed into something else entirely. But when you do have these sort of discussions, it's very hard to maintain a steadfast position because ultimately something will be broached and will push your buttons.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
When you start talking about Germany and Nazi signifiers, what have you, that pushed my buttons. So here I am saying anything should go. But no, everything and any. I don't think anything.
I guess Reginald Dennehy and Rodney King, in both those cases, both gentlemen survived, so that made it a lot more palatable than say Daniel Pearl, Wall Street Journal. I want to say he was with the journalist who got executed there, and then that some footage leaked of that, and it's okay. I guess whether you depict death, that's more of a question for your producers on television to deal with, but you know, movies have been notorious for inserting real life footage, if you want to call it that. So where does the line between art and real life begin and end? Because I mean, Gonzo filmmaking too, you're filming life. It's not even a movie set, you're just sticking your camera, sticking it out the window, and frequently capturing let's say the demimonde or the downtrodden or people who did not maybe give consent. So you have lots of films with the homeless people, with hookers, just sticking a camera out a window to depict, let's say, Los Angeles Skid Row, or all these kinds of things.
Well, I mean,
tons of exploitation.
The reality is, life is beautiful, but life is also very ugly. There's a lot of ugliness out there, and if you're going to start arbitrating what can be depicted and what can be shown.
Yeah, that's bad.
You're creating some sort of false reality because what's actually outside our windows is pretty damn horrific and horrifying. So, you know, journalists, what are they, you know, where do they draw the line? Where do filmmakers draw the line? Where do artists draw the line? Where does society draw the line? Why do different countries have different levels of permissiveness, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? Why is it permissible for a woman to walk topless on a beach in Saint-Tropez or whatever, but not
in Saudi Arabia? And like, I was thinking of Michael Jackson's daughter even today with this kerfuffle. I want to judge Judaism right there regarding her leg hair, which went viral because
I'm not aware of this at all.
Yeah, Paris Jackson. She was just some candid photo. I don't know if it was an Instagram or Snapchat or something with the hairy legs. And it's amazing the extent to which like unshaven pits and leg hair will just cause such a stir everywhere. So it's just amazing. Yeah, again, different sensibilities. No, but again, you know, different types of porno sensibilities. When you think of Japan, different people's approach
to
depictions of different
parts
of the female form.
Again, you know, this is, you know, can I say for, I mean, this is the country that gave us Bukkake, but
to this
day, they will not depict full frontal, like, you know, depict your pubic hair. They'll blur it out. It's bizarre. It's bizarre where people draw the line.
Because
what
everyone has limits.
It's acceptable and not acceptable. Ultimately, it's up to, well, I mean, you cannot really conclude this discussion.
No, we'll have to probably revisit it, and I think we will when we discuss, finally, either I Spit on Your Grave or Last House on the Left, which are going to be coming, because these are two classics of horror cinema that are really the two that we've yet to touch on. That are notorious. Like, we could say, like, Exorcist.
Copy, I Spit on Your Grave that was sent to me free from the distributor. I've yet to see it. I don't want to see it.
Interesting.
I want to see. You say we have to do it?
I guess eventually our time will come because people will come to expect it. But we've frequently defied expectations, so we don't want to necessarily say we're going to. We may just come out of left field and do like the Bad News Bears or something, and
exactly,
instead, who knows?
Yeah.
But one thing for sure is you always find something.
Elvis, musical.
Yeah. One thing for sure, you'll frequently, we hope, find engaging discussions on genre film and a variety of related topics on our podcast, www.reallyawfulmovies.com, uploaded for your enjoyment every Friday. And check out our website, www.reallyawfulmovies.com, and the aforementioned Death by Umbrella, the 100 Weirdest Horror Movie Weapons, which features several video nasty film write-ups, and we think you'd really enjoy that. So pick that up and help support the show, and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care.
Thank you.